This is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers. Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
Le'Veon Bell wants to be paid as an offensive weapon, when if you're the Steelers, he's come across as a bit of a weapon himself in different ways.
And Adam Nathan.
It's tricky because Hugh Jackson said nothing for me to shove him in.
We are going to follow you. Gotcha, you lead us. Gotcha, okay? Let's go do it. Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Go Hawks.
Yep, all changed, new season, 2 years in on the Pedestrian Podcast. As you can hear, we do have a new intro, but also that doesn't mean that you do have to put up with 40 more seconds of Adam's voice as well, Adam.
I think I sound magnificent, I'm not going to lie. Like, we might have a new pod highlight. When we do you know, the podcast awards or whatever, which we never get nominated for, and we have to put some clips through. I mean, I would just go with that, because, I mean, I sound magnificent.
Yeah, it's
as is tradition.
Was it beauty in the eye of beholder, I guess? But yeah, as you can hear on that, there is now only two names on the intro, and there is only two people from now on doing the podcast. Ross messaged both me and Adam a few weeks ago to let us know that he will be stepping away as real life is beginning to take over, and he doesn't have the time or in his busy work schedule. And knowing where Ross works, I can fully understand that. This podcast is turning 2 years old this week. It's July 26th is when the Podbean account was set up. So 2 years ago, all this started because of Ross and a post he put on the Facebook group, which I latched onto, and then Adam latched onto that. So it has been a lot of fun over the last couple of years, as you probably, anyone listening over last season could tell, the Ross work schedule has picked up, not just the last couple of weeks, but the last couple of months. So we completely understand why he's stepping away, and thank him for setting it up and running everything and doing all the editing for the first couple of years, and running and paying for a lot of the stuff as well, Adam. But it's going to be a two-man band from here on.
Yeah, I mean, one day I might actually meet Ross and I can thank him in person, but it's yet to happen. But no, obviously we massively appreciate all of Ross's work, and hopefully cutting us down from 3 to 2 won't drop the quality down from an already zero down to sort of 0 minus a third. Although that, actually that's still zero, so that's consistent.
Yeah.
But we'll keep the all the regular guests on and new guys on, and I'm sure Ross will be poking his head back in at some point and say hello during the season.
Yeah, so that third chair will remain open. It will be a rotating third chair, as Adam says. We've got a pretty good stable of regular guests as well, haven't we, moving into our third year?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, I was looking at the Buffalo Bills Twitter account today, and they had pictures of Josh Allen, Nate Peterman, and AJ McCarron as the three names on the wall. And I think certainly Nathan, Court, and other already. I mean, if maybe even better quarterbacks than those three, but certainly a better trio in the podcast game than they are quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's probably what a weird quarterback room that is. And why would you post that outward and put it on social media? I've introduced myself. For those who are first time listeners, where have you been? My name is Stuart Court, and that is Adam Nathan, the dulcet London tones of Adam Nathan. This week we go with camp for the Seahawks opening up tomorrow, I believe. We're going to run through all the position by position, the battles, the names to watch, and where we see concerns or where we see spots to be excited about. That might not take that long, Adam.
Yeah, moving on to the negatives.
Yeah, and then we'll also get to a couple of your questions. Talk about Marshawn Lynch and Super Bowl 49, because we haven't quite spoken about that enough. And then all the other NFL stuff which has happened in the last few days since we last recorded. And then obviously get in the bin with a brand new bit of production on top as well, Adam.
Yeah, that is pretty sweet. What you've done there is pretty good work.
It is pretty cool. But yeah, for first, training camp does start, I think, tomorrow. I thought today the players, we're recording this when late Wednesday night. The players reported today, Russell Wilson and everyone else on tow. Russell Wilson and all those are strangers, I think, at this point, isn't it?
Yeah, but Wilson, Baldwin and 88 others.
Yeah, well, and there's like 15 other coaches, and they're all going to need name tags for a couple of weeks. So we'll start at the quarterback. Obviously, Russell Wilson is QB1, and there's quite a big gap. We talked last week about the seventh round pick, Alex McGough, or McGough, and Austin Davis is back. The tie is probably going to go to the rookie, isn't it? Would you think, or is it a Boykin Davis situation where the rookie isn't a nailed on cert?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's certainly his Magoo's McGough. What are we going to call him?
What Alex.
Right. It's Mr. Magoo's position to lose, I think. I think if he does well in preseason, it's not like a Jake Heaps who, like, at times looked good but was never actually going to be in the team. I think Mr. Magoo, if he plays well in preseason, he could and should probably take the position. Like, I've always considered, if you equate it to, like, your second-choice goalkeeper at a football team, you might as well make it a younger guy who you can train up and make good, as opposed to an old guy who knows crap. And being a Spurs fan, I've seen a litany of old crap second goalkeepers, so I understand that fully. So, with a bit of luck, Mr. Magoo puts his head down and does well in pre-season and plays well and gets the spot.
And hopefully Steve Rabel, week one at Denver, if he comes into kneel down when we're 35 points up, actually calls him Magoo, and then we've actually infiltrated Seattle Radio. Which
would you call him Mr. Magoo if you had any respect for the podcast?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I do think it is. I think Alex Magoo, Mr. Magoo, sorry, Adam, will be the guy going forward. He does look quite impressive. He played at a small school. Don't ask me what small school that was. It's somewhere in Florida, I believe. But yeah, he did look good in college. Obviously, it's a bit of a step up, but it's the first quarterback since a certain Mr. Wilson in 2012 that the team have selected. So there's a reason they've done that. There's a reason they did that this year. They're obviously clearly worried about the backup behind Wilson, and Wilson has got a lot on his plate this year, as we're going to get to over the next few weeks. So I do think Mr. Magoo is going to be the guy. Austin Davis, he's just going to be steady Eddie. He's not going to really improve. He's just a lesser man Josh McCown at this point, isn't he?
Well, he's objectively shit.
I was being polite. Compared into a starter in this league.
Like, we really don't need to be... But, I mean, I presume he worked under Schottenheimer. He probably beat the Seahawks under Schottenheimer.
Yeah, he did.
When the arse completely fell out of us, and I think we won every other game after that, apart from Kansas City on the road, to go to Super Bowl 49, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds right.
Because I think that was the crazy game where... we got done by the fake pass.
Yeah. We got done by the fake field goal, and then we got done by
the fake punt. We got done by.
Well, not the fake punt. They punted and ran one way.
Yeah.
When Stephen Bailey was on the other sideline, he ran it back and touched.
But then, didn't they have a fourth down that if we got the ball, we were 100% going to score? And I'm pretty sure they passed it instead of kicked it.
May have been, but I think that was Fisher by then. I can't remember.
But Brian Schottenheimer was the offensive coordinator, no, at the time?
I can't remember. It's
a pointless conversation, probably. So we might move on.
Probably. Let's just talk about Brian Schottenheimer.
Let's do it.
Where do you want to go next after quarterback? Running back?
Yeah, I mean, running back's an interesting one because it would be incredibly surprising if a seventh-round pick who's played about 3 minutes would oust a first-round pick, but... I kind of want to see more of Chris Carson based on what I saw from him last year. I mean, obviously, Rashad Penny looks like he's going to be... Well, we need him to be really good, but, you know, I wasn't a fan of the pick in the first place, but you have to hope that Chris Carson is going to get a shot because he didn't really do a lot wrong until he got injured.
Yeah, it did kind of make the Penny pick even stranger because what we saw limited from Chris Carson, yes, he was a seventh-round pick, but... with people like David Johnson in the league doing it from a later round draft slot, it doesn't really matter. But that's what made the Penny pick a bit weirder. As we said last week, on last week's pod, that Pete Carroll loves Chris Carson, and he looks absolutely shredded coming into this training camp. He's got like the Robert Turbin arms, obviously without the PED usage.
We hope.
Alleged, sorry. That is going to be an interesting thing. I think RB1 is going to be way more interesting than 3-4-5, isn't it? With Davis, Prosize, McKissick, and whoever else.
Well, McKissick for me was one of the standout players to watch last year.
And, you know, that game in New York.
I was just about to say, I mean, that play where it was almost like a jet sweep that he ran. But then I can't possibly think about that game in New York without the incredible memory of CJ Procise not participating in a play. And then all of a sudden, you saying to me, where's Procise? And he was injured, participating.
So me, Adam, and the Peppard, Terry Peppard, were up in the gods, basically as high as anyone. Well, basically as high as...
Terry Peppard was on the day.
Yeah, I was trying to think of someone who gets high, I don't know. And it came up on the massive video board at MetLife Stadium that CJ Procise was doubtful with a calf or thigh, and he hadn't touched the ball, which is some feat, and that kind of, I think that's the last time he was active during the season as well, wasn't he?
I think it was, yeah.
But RB1 is a lot more, it's going to tell a lot more for the 2018 Seahawks than possibly anything else on offense, isn't it?
The other alternative is that they probably end up copping out and not actually ever having an RB1 because, you know, so many teams now run a sort of two-headed monster. It's almost more teams do that now than not. So I would imagine that they'll be able to sort of rotate the two and never have to really go out on a limb by making it clear who their number one is because, obviously there'll be big plays where in certain positions they'll put certain guys in, but I would imagine that they never actually let on who number one is.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Who do you see? Obviously, you've got Mike Davis, CJ Procise, JD McKissic, Trey Madden, apparently still on the roster. And then we've got fullbacks Jolston Fowler and Khalil Hill, who was an undrafted free agent back in April. The fullback position is just a dying thing, but Seahawks are going to Seahawk with that. Trey Madden's probably the easiest one, but then it's one from three, do you think, with Procise, Davis and McKissic?
They've got to carry more than three running backs, surely, no?
Well, I'm thinking with the fullback, because they're probably going to carry one of those fullbacks.
I think Procise would do well to make the team, having you know, taken up roster spots the last 2 years and just been a complete Darren Anderton. and, you know, yeah, Carson and Penny, I guess, are as solidly on the team as you could expect.
Yeah.
Mike Davis, they're paying a decent-ish amount, but probably not enough that you'd say he has to play, and he played pretty well last year, but again didn't score a touchdown. I'd probably keep McKissic if you forced me to keep one of those three, to be honest.
I'd probably be the same, just because he's more of a Swiss Army knife than the two. Well, Procise is supposed to be a Swiss Army knife, but we haven't seen it. McKissic showed that he could line up out wide, line up in the slot, line up alongside Wilson, behind Wilson, and do it all. Can't really remember what his pass blocking was like, but yeah, I think he would be the guy for me of those three. Moving on to tight end. According to the depth chart on ourlads.com, Nick Vanett is our starting tight end. That is probably not going to hold up much longer. We've got Ed Dixon, fourth round pick this year, Will Disley, Tyrone Swoops, and someone called Clayton Wilson. I'm not sure if that's just a regen on Football Manager, but he's on the roster. Tight end is... it's probably lost more talent than... it's probably that or the defensive line that's lost as much... has lost the most talent on this team, isn't it? Is that even with Sherman? Because go from Jimmy Graham to Nick Vanette, Ed Dixon, and a blocking tight end rookie, it's...
well, I was going to say, quite a drop-off. Going from one of my favourite players wearing 88, Jimmy Graham, to Will Disley, who's going to be a blocking tight end, and from all account, is going to do that job extremely well. It does feel a little bit deflating, and sort of anything encapsulated that the talent drop this team has gone through this season, or sorry, this off-season, it's probably that. Ed Dixon I've got high-ish hopes for. He did get open, and I think he caught more long passes than any other tight end in the league last year, if I'm not mistaken. But I think you'd be hard-pushed to go out on a limb with any of those guys and say, yeah, that's the guy we're going to lean on. And I would imagine that with the intention be to run the ball a lot more, you'll see a lot of sort of heavy two tight end sets just to block people out of the way.
Yeah, so it's probably going to be three, isn't it? Tight ends again?
Yeah, you'd imagine so. Because last year they had Graham, Wilson, and Vanette.
Yeah. Yeah, I really want to see what Tyrone Swoops could do. He's a former quarterback at Texas. He was an undrafted free agent last year. And he just looks like he's like I don't know, I just kind of want him to be the wild card in this group. And Nick Vanette has had a very strange NFL career so far, coming from a big school and not really doing anything apart from partying on boats in the Puget Sound. He's probably got a bigger question than anyone in that group, isn't he, on him, Vanette?
Yeah, he's sort of like in there almost like because he's supposed to be, but he's never actually shown anything that would suggest he's of that level. I mean, he's not better than like, oh my goodness, the guy's name escapes me. Really, he went to Oakland. He scored a couple of touchdowns. He played tight end, I think, 2 years ago. He scored a winning touchdown against Arizona, and then he moved to Oakland. Oh, what's the guy's name? Come on, Stuart, you're better than me at this.
I have no idea who you're talking about.
We had a tight end that we both liked, and I...
McGrath?
No. Seahawks tight end. Put some hold music on here or something. 2016. What was his name? Cooper Helfitt.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, right now, you know, you'd struggle to say that he's better than Cooper Helfitt.
Yeah.
Based on what we've seen so far.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I just think that's why I think Penny and also... Mr. Magoo. Well, I think that's why Mr. Magoo is going to make the roster over Davis, because the draft capital means a lot, doesn't it? In a rookie year, I know they make out it doesn't, but it does, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. That's probably why he's listed as TE1 on our lads. Before we get to the biggest cluster of them all, we'll go to the wide receiver group. We said a few minutes ago it's Russell Wilson, Doug Baldwin, and 88 others. Doug Baldwin must be out in the cold. But before we talk about Doug Baldwin, we are using it's a really good source if you want to know who the hell is in the Seahawks 90-man roster. Brian Nemhauser, Hawk blogger, every year does a printable training camp roster with notes. And the note on Doug Baldwin one caught my attention while I was reading it last night. He says, remains one of the most underrated players in the NFL. Enjoy him while he's here. It may not be much longer. I mean, that's the first time I've heard it may not be much longer surrounding Doug Baldwin. Do you see that? Do you agree with that, Adam?
Is that really what you want to do to me at midnight? It's painful enough doing this as it is, looking through some of these, and now you're giving me that? Oh my goodness. Well, I mean, but I haven't
heard any whisper of anything like that. I just presume that Doug Baldwin is going to be a Seahawk until the end of time.
He is probably one of the biggest winners, winning mentality in the whole roster. So if they're a disaster this year, he must be going into give or take a contract year coming up.
Yeah, I think it's 2020.
Okay. So next year is last year.
Yeah.
I mean, Brian and Baldwin, I think, are pretty close. So maybe that's sort of him, Don Finucci, wetting our beak with a little bit of information that we otherwise wouldn't have got. But that, I mean, that is just, I mean, that's ruined the day, let alone this podcast. Yeah.
I did read that last night. I thought, where's that come from? Outside of Doug Baldwin, who is wide receiver one, and as Brian does say, one of the most underrated receivers in the league, probably players in the league, let alone receivers. Outside of that, we've got Tyler Lockett somewhere. Yeah, Tyler Lockett, free agent from this year. Joanne Brown, who was on the Cardinals last year. David Moore, Cyril Grayson, Marcus Johnson, who come over in the Michael Bennett trade. Tyler McAvoy, Amara Darbo, Damarre Stringfellow, and Brandon Marshall. That's just a lot of names and not a lot of substance, isn't it?
When you look at this list, like, I have an immense amount of respect for anyone that has been looking at the Seahawks over the offseason and said, we're making the playoffs, that is great to be the underdog again, people won't believe in us, and as a result, we'll get good. At some point, you have to look at the lack of talent in key positions and think, it's going to be a struggle. Like, I'm trying not to be too negative here, but if someone double covers Doug Baldwin, which you would imagine will happen quite a lot, because at least last year you had to worry about Jimmy Graham, you had to worry about Russell Wilson's legs and Paul Richardson, and to a degree Tyler Lockett. There's just nothing else there.
No. I mean, people are going to, Brandon Marshall did this. Yeah, Brandon Marshall hasn't done any...
I'd be surprised if he makes the team.
Yeah, I'll be amazed if he makes the team. We've got David Moore, who's only on the roster because they didn't want to lose him to another team last year. Cyril Grayson is a track athlete, let's be honest, before he proves anything else. Tanner McAvoy is an experiment which hasn't really paid off. Amara Darbo is possibly close to getting Nick Vanette territory because he did absolutely nothing last year. Jaron Brown is... Who knows?
The shit Brown from Arizona.
And then you got Demore Stringfellow, who got kicked out of the Huskies after he started nonsense after the Super Bowl 48 win, because the dude is a Broncos fan. Yeah,
and
just
what is a Keenan Reynolds?
I didn't see that name. He used to be quarterback at Navy or Army, one of those. And he's switched to I think that's him. I'm pretty sure that's Keenan Reynolds. I think he's
Is it Neil's son?
don't know. But his brother Cal is coming up next year.
Okay, very good.
There you go. Thank you.
Watch out for the tuna.
Yeah. But there is not a lot. We said earlier about Russell Wilson having a lot on his plate. Doug Baldwin is not far behind, is he?
Imagine if he gets injured, God forbid.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Touch all the wood in the world.
I mean, I have to say, if they can cough something up that makes this offense better than last season's, and let's be honest, last year's was not great by any stretch. Good luck to them.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really depressing. I don't even know where half these players come from.
Why have we done this, Stuart? What were you doing? We'd done a podcast last week that could have tied us over to at least week three. What have you done?
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
It's crossed midnight. I got engaged exactly a year ago today, and this is how I'm bringing that day in.
Sorry.
Maybe better than last year, to be honest. Don't tell Rosie.
All right, just listen to she.
Absolutely not.
No. Right, offensive line. Let's talk about something joyous. Gordon Curry on Twitter asked, amongst a few other questions, he jumbled into one tweet rather than Gordo. He wants to know if the offensive line is going to be any different. The only way is up, isn't it? I don't know who sang that, but that should be the bed of this bit. The only way is up for that O-line, Adam?
Again, it's just a lot of names, isn't it? I mean, I'm looking at the current depth chart. You've got Dwayne Brown, Ethan Posits, Justin Britt, Fluka, and Jermaine Ifedi. I mean,
Look at that. Look at the name next to a Fedi at right tackle. Don't do that.
I mean, three of those are or were abysmal pass blockers last year. Like, beyond abysmal. And DJ Fluka could be, you know, a good run blocker, and a Fedi maybe can sort out the run block. And if you do put two tight ends in, but eventually you're going to be in third and seven. And what are you going to...
Probably quite a lot.
Yeah. And what, especially when, you know, they've got this whole thing of like, the way to be a good team is to run well when they know you're going to run. Well, if they're going to do that, can I suggest don't run? I'm no Bill Belichick, but don't run. That situation.
But right on name value compared to the wide receiver core and probably the tight end group, the first five on that list on name value alone isn't bad, is it?
No, what I will give them is twofold. One, there's a degree of continuity which has got to be, it has got to help, and so you'd hope they'd be better in that sense. The second thing is it's Mike Solari instead of Tom Cable, so hopefully the zone blocking system goes out the window and players do things they're more comfortable with.
Yeah.
But you just have to, you know, if Solari can, you know, sort Ifedi out and make him not look so clunky, if he can sort of teach Potich, you know, who was fine last year for a rookie, and he did probably about as much as you could ask of a rookie, but can he sort him out? You know, Dwayne Brown wasn't fantastic when he started playing, so, you know, can Solari turn Brown into, you know, a top left tackle that he was in Houston? There's reasons to be optimistic, but I think if you've been a Seahawks fan for the last 4 years, it's very difficult not to just be generally terrified at anything to do with the offensive line, because it's scarred us, let's be honest. It's completely scarred us.
Yeah, it is. There is a lot on the paper, but there's not a lot after the name title, but it's not a lot on the CV as well. Posich was quite good, but also took on a continuity. It's always good when George Fant is now listed as a right tackle, Adam.
And Reece Odhiambo, a right guard, when he's only ever played on the left side to any degree of...
And also, I mean, this probably holds no weight, and Seahawks don't release a depth chart. They just release a roster in a certain depth chart adjacent way. Jamarco Jones is a left tackle after playing right tackle, well, being dubbed as a right tackle, tabbed as a right tackle, coming out of Ohio State. But yeah, I do think Brown, Britt, yeah, Jesus. Fluka, you'd hope, is going to be better, but yeah, it's another way. We don't want a George Fant situation 12 months ago on any position, do you, on that O-line?
No. An injury would be pretty disastrous. I guess the only... I mean, I'm not particularly sold on... I'm a bit worried about right guard because I don't think we've got anyone that can pass block at right guard currently.
No.
If Posich or Britt was to go down, I think that's probably where we've got the most cover in terms of numbers, because I guess Posich could kick inside to centre, where I guess his future is in the team anyway. You have got Joey Hunt.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. It's going to be one of those things, isn't it? And, like, well done if you can predict what the line are going to be like. I'm going to be optimistic and say they're going to be better than last year, but, you know, what's better than last year? I mean, that could be, you know, having... like Spain's World Cup instead of Germany. It was still crap, but it was just slightly better.
Yeah, more enjoyable. But also, this is an O-line where in the first 2 weeks they're going to face, the first week they're going to face Von Miller and Shane Ray. So
and Chubb.
Oh, he's there now, isn't he? Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Oh, why have we done this?
On the road, on grass. I think grass?
Yeah. It is a later kickoff, so yay. But yeah, off the O-line, only it's a bit early, the camp hasn't started. It's the first five on that list. Is that the five you expect to be starting?
I wonder if Fluka is going to be like the Odeh Bushi, who sort of has come in and people think he's starting just because he's a free agent. And actually, Bushi did start, to be fair to him, but only because I think Posich went down. It wouldn't stun me if they played George Fant at right tackle and Ifedi at right guard. It wouldn't thrill me, but it wouldn't stun me.
No, we've also got the quarterback from Any Given Sunday at right tackle as well, Willie Beavers. That was him, wasn't it?
Get him in.
Yeah. Right, moving on to defense, because why not? Defensive line has, as I said to you, I said somewhere. I said earlier, didn't I? Defensive line has probably undergone more change than any other position on the Seahawks roster. No more Sheldon Richardson. That was a worthy expense paid for that. Michael Bennett is now in Philadelphia. Cliff Avril is now on sports radio in Seattle. Chris Bolden asked if we think they're going to pay Frank Clark. Before we get to that, Frank Clark is the... He needs to do what he's done for his first 2 years in year three, doesn't he?
Well, and this is probably unfair to ask this of him because, you know, how much can you expect? But he probably needs to do more than he's done in his first 3 years. He needs to be the complete tone setter on defence. I mean, he's been... Can I use the word fortunate? Let's assume I'm using the word fortunate, but I don't mean this in a harsh way. He's been able to be the third guy after Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett, which, as good a player as Clark is, it's a very enviable position to be in because you've got two guys arguably that need double coverage at all times. And he's been able to be the third guy that's been able to blast through and make some big plays.
Yeah.
Can he be the guy off the edge that gets doubled every time? Because ultimately he's the only name really that you could hang your hat on there as being a top class defensive end.
Yeah.
Can he do it when he's getting Von Miller-like attention? That's going to be, I guess, what defines what contract he gets next year.
Yeah, also, it seems to matter a lot with Clark, like it didn't with Michael Bennett, where he lines up as well. The other defensive ends are rookie third-round pick from this year, Rasheen Green, Deion Jordan, Marcus Smith, someone called Brandon Jackson, and Quinton Jefferson. I mean, that just emphasises the point where it's a lot on Clark if the guys in the middle don't continue how they looked last year, Adam.
It's a huge pressure, and it's an enormous pressure on Deion Jordan, who, again, they were able to bring him in Arizona, I think, primarily where he managed to get a couple of sacks against a crap quarterback with the rest of the defense around him. Rasheem Green, we know, is probably undersized for the position right now, and I think redshirting him is, you know, in a normal Seahawk year, probably what you'd want him to do. Quinton Jefferson has always shown flashes, but probably not enough to be, you know, a consistent role player. But,
no.
You know, someone like Deion Jordan, to ask him to start when, as I said to you last night, in Super Bowl 48, that roster, he'd probably be the fifth best defensive end. You know, yeah. You're just asking a lot of guys. I'm not saying they can't do it, but...
You're asking for Deion Jordan and Malcolm Smith to get 10 sacks between them at least, aren't you?
Which is really hard. I mean, Deion Jordan's got to play 10 games first. I'm not going to go at him for that, but look at his record. I mean, you know, yeah. Last year he looked good and then he got injured straight away. And yeah. It's just asking a lot of guys that have never done it before to be a bit more than role players, and that's going to be tricky.
I mean, Deion Jordan has had a massive vote in confidence by how they treated him and paid him in the offseason restricted free agent, though, isn't he? So you'd hope that comes through on the field when they go back on the field tomorrow over the next few weeks as well, with that faith and that belief that he now has around him, which he didn't really have in Miami. And the pressure being the top five pick really did tell on him, and off-field issues crept in far too readily. You do kind of hope that it does everything translate. But again, like you said, it is a lot to pin on someone who's, again, has a pretty bare CV.
Yeah, I mean, look, you have to hope that probably our best, our most solid position on defense right now, I would say, is probably
in the middle,
defensive tackle. So, you know, if Reed and Jones can get the pressure and, you know, cause as much disruption as they managed last year, and they might be able to force four sacks into Jordan's hands just sort of by getting a good push against his offensive tackle. So that will help. But, you know, we're asking a lot of... I mean, how many starts have the defensive line had combined here, really? If you compare Frank, that to a few Clark, years ago.
Well, Frank Clark has started... I'm on his reference page. He started 17 games in 3 years. 12 last year, 5 in 2016. The other defensive ends, I wouldn't imagine it's much above... Well, Green hasn't started one. Jordan Smith... I'd imagine, I can't believe it's above 10. I doubt.
I mean,
it's
the whole line's probably got 50 starts between them.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. We'll get. We'll, yeah. Yeah. This. Oh, Jesus.
I mean, that's a lot to ask of them. It just is.
Yeah, it is.
I don't think we're being. You know, often we like to have a laugh, and you know, we say we're not very good. I don't think we're being overly critical here. I just think the cold facts of it say that it's going to be tough for them.
Yeah, I'd agree, and there is a lot on. Again, like the receiver position, a lot on players who haven't shown a lot through no fault of their own, but in situations like Quinton Jefferson has been injured quite a bit. Brandon Jackson, I'm sure he's had a fun career. And Rasheem Green, who's a rookie. So there is, yeah, it's not all off their own making, but this roster of defensive ends is of the Seahawks' making, isn't it? With decisions they made with a certain Michael Bennett, Adam.
For sure. And, you know, when we go on to discuss people like Earl Thomas, I mean, I think my frustration going into this year is that they could have just done so much more and got so much more out of what we lost, and ultimately we got nothing.
Yeah, and the little we did get, if we got anything, what they replaced them with hasn't paid out, and that is shown more, almost more than anywhere else, with the guy who's third on the list at inside right D tackle, and Malik McDowell, and he looks like he's probably not going to make the end of the month as an NFL player.
And then I'm looking and down.
That is a massive butterfly effect that incident had on this team. Is just
huge.
Unbelievable. They really should make like 30 for 30 on whatever happened on that ATV.
I know. And then also, yeah, I'm looking down one from right defensive end, and you've got the LOL B for linebacker. And you know, I think it's quite ironic that it's his LOLB. I mean, Barkevious Mingo, I think he, by signing him, we gave up the third round pick that we got for Jimmy Graham?
Yeah, well, Graham or...
Or Sheldon Richardson?
Or Richard, or Paul Richardson. Richardson. Yeah.
So, you know, you swapped a lot of talent there for not a lot in return.
Yep. We'll move on before we jump off the White Cliffs. Moving aside to the left defensive tackle, I got Jaron Reed, which one's his first name? Shamar Stevens. Yeah. Poonah Ford, Naz Jones, Tom Johnson, well, Malik McDowell currently, but doesn't, and Eddie Wilson. Puna Ford is possibly the undrafted free agent of the lot to watch. He was really good in college. He's just a bit small, a bit undersized for position, but he could be, I can't think of a comparison to make, but he could be someone to really key in on as preseason rolls around to week two, week three, and then probably week four as he makes a claim for the roster. But Jerron Reed is second round pick. John Schneider called him the best run defender in that draft class 2 years ago, and he's shown nothing to disprove John Schneider. It's possibly been one of the more beneficial picks in the last few years for the Seahawks, isn't he, Jerron Reed?
It was a brilliant pick, and he's been a great player. He's almost unfortunate that he wasn't born 5 years previous, when teams put a lot more emphasis on running than they do now. You know, ultimately, we stand to lose a lot of what he's really good at, because teams are so able to pass around players now, and
yeah,
you know, the way that they dump off and whatever. It'd be interesting to see how much rushing actually takes place in the NFL this year. But you know, at least you've got to be pretty confident that if someone does try and rush on him, he's going to stop him. And if he can just add, you know, more interior pressure, then yeah, you know, he could be looking at getting himself a massive great contract next year as well.
Yeah, I think if he just adds a couple of 2 or 3 sacks to his game, a dozen or so pressures on his season, then we have a pretty good interior guy in Jerron Reed. The Bama boys do come out, and when they can play, despite their knee ailments, they are pretty damn good. Naz Jones, though, was probably one of the more pleasant surprises of last year. He's almost ascended, it seems, to a starting role. And again, it's someone with a lot on him. Hopefully, it's just not too much too soon, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. There's not really a lot more to add there. You know, he's clearly got the talent, but you're asking a lot for a guy in his second year to be a starter, as opposed to a role player behind someone like Sheldon Richardson, who he can learn off, and then you're rotating and out when, you know, when the offensive line are a bit more tired or whatever. So again, I wish him all the best. I hope he can stay healthy. I hope he can start and be as dominant over, you know, 80 plays a game as he was over 20 last year, because he looked really good.
Yeah, I'd agree. Linebacker Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright are still there. For as pleasing and surprising Naz Jones was, we've got to see more 2013, 2014 from KJ Wright this year, haven't we? With, again, there's not a lot coming up behind DJ Alexander, Jacob Martin, Josh Perry, Jacob Pugh, and obviously Shaquem Griffin are probably the standout names behind though Bobby and KJ. But KJ's got to be better in 2018 with what was, despite what people were trying to tell you, it was a bit of a quiet year when things went wrong defensively with big plays. It was far too regular, but you point to KJ, wouldn't it?
Yeah, man, I don't think he spent much time on the injury report, but he looked pretty much permanently leggy all of last season, maybe a tad heavier. He just didn't quite have that side-to-side quickness that he's had in the past, and I guess we're going to know fairly soon if that was an age thing or if that was just, you know, he just didn't have quite a good year. But, you know, people are saying regularly on NFL Network and on podcasts that you listen to, you know, oh, next year they've got to pay X and they've got to pay Y, they've got to pay KJ Wright. And I'm thinking they're probably not going to pay KJ Wright if he plays this year like he played last year, unfortunately for him. But yeah, it's a massive year. I mean, we're going to play, I would imagine, the majority of snaps in nickel, so you are only going to have two linebackers on the field, I would imagine. And so, again, there's a huge... For Doug Baldwin of the offense, read Bobby Wagner for the defense.
Yeah, definitely. And then, obviously, Shaquem Griffin is the headline name of the depth, guys. There's going to be a lot on his plate. There's going to be a lot of attention paid to him in the first few weeks of preseason. But we need something to come from that, don't we, really?
He's going to struggle to win, I feel. The narrative is going to be understandably so much about his hand that he's going to make good plays which will be, you know, really explosive, and they'll be talking about. I just worry that there's always going to be the caveat with him where someone's going to be, you know, regardless of how well he does, the narrative's going to be, oh yeah, but at some point is the hand going to be a problem? And I just hope they just let him fly and let him play and be a special teams dominator, and hopefully he can feature on defense as well, because I think there could be a really good player there. But he's certainly someone, as with so many others that we've already discussed, that it's just going to take time, and his reps is going to be the best way. And he's going to have to make a few mistakes in order to learn what he can and can't do.
Yeah, yeah. There's also the thing with Shaquem Griffin this year, with preseason especially, obviously, is not what if he makes the highlight plays, it's how they use him. That's the thing to watch with Ken Norton. He was the linebacker coach last time he was in Seattle. Shaquem probably can't learn from many better people than Ken Norton Jr. Mm-hmm. So it will be interesting. I'm obviously Pete Carroll as well with his defensive expertise. It's just going to be interesting for me how they use him. Not the plays he makes, but how they use him is going to be. If they use him as that, I said use quite a lot last couple of minutes. If they use him as that extra defensive end, or how they compare and how they line him up alongside Barkevius Mingo in certain situations. Obviously, this preseason is pretty vanilla, so we might not see that till Denver and Chicago in September. But, yeah, just don't watch out for the plays. Watch how he lines up and where he lines up and who his responsibilities they give him straight off the bat. Cornerback, secondary, we're going to blast through this because it's just depressing to read without Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman there, isn't it, Adam?
And Earl Thomas, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah, most likely Earl Thomas. Nico Thorpe, DeAndre Elliott, Byron Maxwell, Mo Alexander, Bradley McDougal, Delano Hill, TJ Mitchison, some of these names, Dante Johnson, Tedrick Thompson, Akeem King, Shaquem Griffin, Mike Tyson, Trey Flowers, who's a safety moving to, well, I thought it was a corner moving to safety, I don't know, and Alex Carter, and obviously then Earl Thomas, but we'll get into him in a bit. Shaquem Griffin, he's the Nazir Jones of the secondary. He's entering second year. There's going to be a hell of a lot on his plate, it would appear.
Huge. I mean, they're going to ask him unfairly at times to probably be a shadow guy, unless they ask him just to kick out left and just take up a whole side of the field. But it's going to be hard, and he's going to make mistakes. But if with so many players this year, this is just a great opportunity to give guys reps in big starting positions.
Yeah.
I don't think he could have done any more than he did last year. He was as good as you could possibly expect of a guy who, you know, he wasn't taken as high as Jalen Ramsey, so you can't expect him to be like that. But for a third-round rookie cornerback, he could not have done any more for us. And I guess now you hope that he moves up and takes the next step and looks like a, you know, can he be as good as Brandon Maxwell in 2013?
Yeah,
Byron Maxwell in 2013, I guess that's probably the target.
Yeah. You're not going to get it would be something spectacular if Shaquem Griffin's an All-Pro by the end of the year. But it's a tough ask. But yeah, Maxwell, that is, you just hope that is probably probably the watermark for him. Opposite him, though, is it going to be Maxwell, or are they going to? God, who the hell are they going to play opposite him?
I think it's going to be Byron Maxwell to start the season. You know, a lot of people are saying, yeah, can Nico Thorpe do a job? But, you know, who's seen these guys play enough to suggest that they can or can't? I mean, people are putting a lot of confidence in players that I've barely seen get any reps.
Yeah.
And it's sort of another reason why I was a bit disappointed that Deshaun Shedd was allowed to leave for so little, really, because you just think that just a little bit of continuity could have been so helpful. And as I said last week, Deshaun Shedd 2 years ago had a better year than Shaq Griffin had last year. He was genuinely really good, and we were gutted to see him go down with that injury in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if he's a guy that could have been kept along for, again, not a lot of money to stay, but here we are, and I guess it's a great opportunity for one of these young guys to get a load of reps.
Yeah, it's another one where they've said they've done right by the player to the immediate detriment of the team with Deshaun Shea. It was just a bit of a strange one Richard Sherman stuff didn't come out of nowhere where they decided to get rid of him. That was something that's been bubbling for 15, 16, 18 months before he actually left. So it's just weirdly short-sighted, for, as you say, for not a lot of money, and it's left the cupboard a bit bare. But also at the same time, the fact that they waited till the fifth round to restock that with Trey Flowers, who's moving positions. He's not even last year was Mike Tyson, this year's Trey Flowers moving positions from when he played in college. It's just a weird approach to everything. But having said that, the secondary and defensive backfield is where Pete Carroll earned his call. It's where he built his reputation. So, if like with Shaquem Griffin at linebacker, there's probably no one better they could learn from Pete Carroll. He's going to probably give this group more attention than he has the last couple of years with Chris Rashad around, Adam.
For sure. And, you know, with all of these things, I heard a really interesting comment that they were saying that the Cleveland Browns took Denzel Ward instead of Chubb at number four because they thought Garrett was getting so close to the quarterback so many times last year, but there was always a wide receiver open, and that was stopping them getting sacked. So they got Ward in order to give Garrett extra time up front. And I think the best way to protect the secondary is going to be by getting pressure up front. But yeah, ultimately, the front are so green that we're going to need the guys at the back to try and keep receivers in check. Yeah. So it's going to be hard. But I think when we try and analyze the defense next year and how they play, it's probably going to be best to try and look. You know, obviously some guys will blow assignments and lose their man, but we're probably going to have to try and look at it as a whole thing, a whole unit, and see how they work together. Because
Rome wasn't built in a day.
Very much so.
Yeah, and also the one name we haven't mentioned, he's listed as nickelback on our lads. It's Justin Coleman, who come over in the Cassius Marsh trade, who's now in San Francisco and has completely poo-pooed the whole experience he had in Foxborough. It's probably more player than operator with that. But Justin Coleman, he could be a wild card with all that, with all said and done. And he probably is going to see more time inside where Jeremy Lane made all his money, rightly or wrongly, a couple of years ago. But Coleman is probably the biggest wild card in all that group, isn't he? With or without Will Thomas.
Yeah, he was one of the most enjoyable players to watch last year, and he seems to, you know, read quarterbacks quite well. You know, he made a great play in Dallas, ran it back for six, and you know, the team are going to play a lot of time in nickel, and so you hope that he can have the same impact as he had last year, because he was really fun to watch.
The his game against the Colts and Cowboys are as good as it got at certain times for that Seahawks secondary. Moving on quickly to special teams, kicker is going to be between Sebastian Jankowski and former Jags kicker Jason Myers. But then probably the one that's going to get more attention than you'd probably expect it to is the punter position we talked about last week. Michael Dixon, fifth round pick back in April from Texas, the Aussie kicker, punter, kicker, whatever, guy who boots the ball long way and very high, is in a battle with John Ryan. John Ryan took to Instagram a couple of days ago and posted a picture of him back in his Winnipeg Blue Bombers gear. So I don't know how old that picture is, probably a good decade or so ago. He said, "My first pro training camp over 14 years ago," that's how long ago it was. "As a punter, when you show up at number 70 is hanging in your locker, you know you're a long shot to make the team. That number no longer hangs in my locker, but I might be even a bigger long shot to make it this year. Cheer for me, don't cheer for me, but never, ever count me out." I mean, that's kind of, I mean, a position of a punter which is kind of ridiculed a little bit. That is exactly what you want to hear with someone facing a pretty steep battle for his job and his position, Adam.
How Seahawky would it be to carry two punters next year?
It would be. We could like a fourth. It would be four centers and two punters.
Yeah, McKissick should get cut to keep two punters.
But I mean, John Ryan is probably with all his social media a couple of years ago, and just how his whole approach to everything is just—he's one of the more unheralded. With his popularity, isn't he, John Ryan?
You got to love him. He's a real legend and stalwart of the team. And it's one of those battles that you almost just want to let it play out and see who wins and hope that the team... You sort of hope that it becomes painfully obvious who has to be the punter, if that makes sense.
Because
it would be a really hard one to... You know, if it was 50-50 or whatever, and they end up going with the young guy at the expense of the old guy who's been such a stalwart for the team, I think everyone would be pretty sad about that.
Yeah, I think John Ryan's fully aware of the business side. I think he's fully aware of, having probably seen Dixon over the summer of the OTAs and stuff, that the chances are slim. It will be pretty sad when it comes through if he is released or if he does end up leaving Seattle, because as you say, he's the only Seahawk which outdates Pete Carroll and John Schneider. He's the only one who didn't sign a contract until a couple of years ago. But yeah, you'd expect with all the buzz around Michael Dixon, it to take a bit of a ham fisting of a job from the Aussie. To screw that up. Yeah, it would be sad if it does go that way. And John Ryan will always have the Green Bay Championship game and that picture of him throwing the ball to Gary Gilliam.
Indeed.
Yeah, but yeah, we've talked about players who are there. I don't know, there's a pretty galling, interesting, depending on your site of the Seahawks tweet, about players and the amount of money on players who aren't going to be there in 2018.
Yeah, I don't know if you've got the tweet lined up. I'm just looking at it now in my likes. It was basically that... Let me see if I can find it. I like too many tweets, obviously. here we go. The Seahawks have spent... Two tweets for you. One from Field Goals. The Seahawks are spending the most money in the NFL at safety position. One is retired. The other doesn't want to play in his current contract. Breaking news. This is not ideal. And the second tweet is the following players are taking up $31 million of Seattle's 2018 salary cap.
So wait, that's $31 million.
Of a, which is...
145, I think it is this year?
No, 173, I think.
Okay.
So let's say between a fifth and a sixth. Mm. Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman, Michael Bennett, Jeremy Lane, and Jermaine Kearse. Now, again, it's really admirable that so many fans are so positive about, you know, the turnaround and what the team can do. The maths and the odds would suggest it's just really hard to win if that's the case. You know, every cent is so important. You know, last year, they couldn't play some players because they needed to claw money back at certain times. They had to release someone in order to sign them back on a veteran minimum. Like, every penny counts. And to lose, like, a fifth of your salary cap to guys that aren't going to play, the odds are always going to be against you.
Yeah, that was quite a gut punch of a tweet to read. And Jermaine Kearse still being paid is just an absolute lunacy.
Hot take: Jermaine Kearse starts game one for the Seahawks next year.
Oh, huh? No, I've got a hot take. Golden Tate is a Seahawk in 2019.
Ooh, bringing the band back together.
yeah, that is quite a lot. Before we move on to other things, other NFL things. Chris Bowen did ask about Frank Clark contract. We're going to have to pay him. We can't just keep going into seasons with, no offense to you, sir, Brandon Jacksons of the world. He's entering his final year of his rookie contract. He was a 63rd overall pick in 2015 draft in the second round. And you don't have to go far back on the calendar to find someone to compare him to. Daniil Hunter of the Minnesota Vikings was the... I had it up on my computer. He was third round pick, 88 overall for the Vikings in that same draft. And 2 weeks ago, he signed a 5-year contract extension worth $72 million. Hunter will receive a $40 million in guarantees and then $15 million signing bonus. $16.9 million of that is fully guaranteed get that signing. That is big numbers and a lot. And Daniil Hunter, for all that, is played in the same amount of games and has 25 and a half sacks to Frank Clark's 22 sacks. So that's a lot. That's a hell of a lot of money, isn't it? But you'd expect that Frank Clark is going to be paid that. And also next year, the Raiders are probably going to pay Khalil Mack at some point as well.
That does seem fairly team friendly, though, overall.
Yeah, it's just the first thing. Before we move into an NFL era with fully guaranteed contracts, $72 million off the bat is a lot.
Yeah, but your signing bonus is amortized over the length of the contract from a cap perspective. $16.9 million in full guarantees is not that. That doesn't sound like a great deal given some of the deals that some guys are getting.
Yeah, but that is a pretty helpful, a pretty steady baseline for what Frank Clark is one going to ask for and a starting point for the Seahawks, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, the worry for me is if he's after sort of $15 million guaranteed for the first 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, that's when it becomes a problem.
I mean, for the first 2 years of this deal, first year of the deal, he's only $5 million against the cap, Hunter. Then he's 13, 14, 15, 15, and $12 million against the cap. Obviously, then the dead money in cap savings increases as well. So, yeah, the more I read it, but just that $17 million start off is just quite a lot. But they have to pay him, don't they?
I think they have to see what they get from him this year. He doesn't prove himself to be a number one caliber, which I'm not saying he won't, but no, there's a chance. He's never had to do it. So if he... You know, you're not going to pay a guy if he doesn't yeah, he probably needs double figure sacks this season.
Yeah. I'd agree with that. It will be one to watch. Obviously, Tyler Lockett is in that same boat, and we didn't really talk about him as wide receiver, but he is in the KJ Wright area anywhere. He needs to really show a bounce back from that injury 18, 19 months ago now.
Massively. He has a lot to prove. I mean, he's a guy that I wouldn't even consider giving a contract to at the moment. If he could show what he did in his rookie year, then it's a no-brainer, but the last 2 years have been fine.
Yeah.
And he's been unlucky because of injury, in fairness.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was a pretty severe injury come back from last year as well. Obviously, we're doing this late Wednesday, South Thursday morning. Marshawn Lynch, interview he did with Matt Barnes for... What website was this? For Uninterrupted, it came out earlier today. Sam Gold of The Athletic tweeted it out, and he's got a pretty interesting comment on what it was like in the huddle on the 1 yard line at Super Bowl 49. Here's what Lynch said.
You think you should have audibled? And I mean, at the end of the day, like, not mad at him, not mad at who called the situation or the play. But at the end of the day, I'm gonna tell you like this. When that play was called and I seen the expression on other 10 guys' face in there, all they eyes was like, if we was in a huddle like this and everybody got their head down it, when they heard the call, even the receivers, all they shit just was like, and they looked right at me. I'm looking like, breaking it. What y'all want me to do? So, I mean, at the end of the day, you feel me, though? Just, you know, what happened, and I just, at that point in time, I could realistically say I've done everything in the game. And I mean, to win a Super Bowl and to lose a Super Bowl in the fashion that we did lose it in, like, I mean, it don't get no better for a person. All it do is, at the end of the day, is it test your character.
Yeah, so that is as about unsurprising as you can get in the true Marshawn Lynch dialect delivery, I guess. But it is interesting to finally hear from the guy who probably, after the team, and, well, he's pretty high up on the list of people who lost a lot from that play, isn't he? Because he was probably MVP if things go differently.
Yeah, the funny thing is that he's probably the guy who is most at peace with it in the whole interview. He seems that the only guy that I can really truly say feels like he's moved on from it and gotten on with his life and his career. I'm not saying that to criticise those that haven't, because I wouldn't be able to get over it. But he sounds almost just, you know, understandable about it. It is tough to listen to every time. I wonder if it'll ever not be tough. I don't think it will ever get easier.
No, it's just one of those things which will just forever haunt and linger. But, you know, now Lynch has talked about it so candidly, maybe that will slow down a little bit until we play New England in a couple of years. Also, elsewhere in former Seahawk land, Richard Sherman today was cleared for practice and got a $3 million bonus, which is just hilarious. As I said, I think I said to you a couple of weeks ago, Richard Sherman's going to practice before Earl Thomas does, Adam.
Richard Sherman's going to be only guy out of the Legion of Boom that's practicing tomorrow. And we let him go largely because there were health concerns.
Yeah, it's just, it's a case of they're not being able to get out of their own way in certain junctures. And I didn't buy the physical side of it to begin with, and then especially lined up with the Buckle Bennett stuff, and then obviously we had Mr. Peterson in the building as well. It's just a weird, weird cloud and surrounding that exit. I hope that Sherm makes a Pro Bowl, gets every last dollar he can and every bonus out of that contract for the 49ers. I don't get any ill will towards him. People saying that Earl Thomas should honor his contract have very short-term memories, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, the Earl Thomas thing is annoying, but I don't blame him. I blame the team more than him, because we all saw this coming a mile off.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a sneak preview, I'm probably putting the entire Seahawks front office in the bin for the way they've handled some of the players in this offseason. And Richard Sherman being cleared to practice tomorrow is, you know, quite a big reason for it.
It's the 26th of July and Richard Sherman can practice. If things are Seahawks, we'll all be praising how well he's... Because that is a pretty severe injury, and to be back on the field, I mean, we never saw certain players again who suffered that. Anthony McCoy, I'd just give up on the NFL after his second Achilles injury. It's a massive testament to the guy that we cheer for and enjoyed watching for those years, that he's done this even at the age where the Seahawks, as we said, saw him not fit for purpose anymore.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to spend hours across the season talking about ex-Seahawkers, but I just want to make it very clear that this podcast is 100% in support of Richard Sherman and everything he does, and ultimately it may lead in a pick against Seattle, but I am and forever will be Team Sherman, and that's never going to change.
You're the guy, well, Brandon Brown is going through his old different thing currently, but Earl Thomas is still and apparently won't be reporting to training camp. He hasn't reported today, and he won't be anytime soon. Nothing seems to have changed. There's been a weird thing coming out where he spoke to Mark Davis in the hotel, and apparently that's news with Earl Thomas, but it's just Earl Thomas running propaganda, steering the wheel on his side of the bargain, really, isn't he? He's pulling the strings on how people from the outside view him. And it will, for a certain number, it seems to be changing, as I said, with Sherman, a bit weirdly, and a bit short-term memory, isn't it, with Earl?
Yeah, I wonder how, in, let's say, 20 years' time, what the reaction will be. You know, let's say Thomas doesn't play the first 8 games of the season, comes back, plays half-assed, and then leaves, which, you know, could feasibly happen. Yeah. I wonder what it's going to be like in 15, 20 years when they get these guys back and, you know, do the Ring of Honor. It just seems like a bit of a shame that it's going to be tainted. I don't see how it's not going to be partly tainted, because that's just the way that sports fans are wired. That's the only thing that I can really think of now. I mean, it's going to play out. I don't know how it's going to end, and I think it's just going to get quite boring. So I'm just sort of trying to ignore that it's even going on and just just cracking on without him. To be honest, I don't see how you can approach it any other way.
No, yeah, he'll turn up when he turns up, or he'll go when the deal is right. It's just a weird. It's just a bit boring. Elsewhere in the NFC West, before we move on to get in the bin, the Rams and running back Todd Gurley yesterday, or on Tuesday, agreed on a 4-year extension worth $60 million. That includes $45 million guaranteed. It ties him to LA and the Rams for the next 6 years. We talked about, we have people on our Twitter timelines who talk about how overpaying or overvaluing running backs is not a bad idea. The Rams have kind of gone the opposite direction to that, along the same lines as we did by drafting one in the first round as well. But the biggest thing with Gurley for me is that the deal's been coming before Aaron Donald has been paid. He still hasn't got his big money. And as I tweeted to my mate as a Rams fan, just keep on doing it. If it was Aaron Donald, you don't settle for anything less than $55 million guaranteed, do you?
Agreed. I mean, I think the thing about Gurley is that he had 800 receiving yards last year, which, you know, is not to be sniffed at. And I think that's, you know, when you get a player like that, you can justify the spending. But yeah, I mean, I do not want to see Aaron Donald lining up against Ndamukong Suh against us. So long may that holdout continue.
Yeah. But is he holding out? I must miss that.
Yeah, he's holding out. He's not there. He's not a camp.
Good. I keep doing that. Don't come back for anything less than, don't know, yeah, Sue numbers a couple of years ago, Haynesworth numbers a few years after that. Moving back on to one of our now weekly segments. This week, though, it's got some production. It's time for Get in the Bin.
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly's an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
So look, I enjoyed editing that. There was a Colin Cowherd heavy one, though, wasn't there, Adam?
Yeah, you certainly dug the knife in on Cowherd. Yeah. I had to rein you in, a bit, let's say.
There's a 9-minute YouTube video with all these terrible takes. So enjoy that if you're, like me, not a massive fan of Mr. Sick Cowherd. This week, Adam, GITB for you is?
I'm going to do GITBI. And basically what I'm doing is it's get in the bin if. And I'm aiming it at John Harbaugh and the Arizona Cardinals head coach, who I actually don't even know his name, which is, you know, the new Bruce Arians, let's call him, because I just genuinely don't even know who the head coach is this season. And it's get in the bin if you don't start the season with Josh Rosen and Lamar Jackson, respectively. They're going to be your guys for the future. Get them in, get them reps, let them make their mistakes now, because they're going to be great players, and the whole league deserves better than having to watch any more of Joe Flacco and, to a lesser extent, Sam Bradford. Just give me something to enjoy watching on Sunday nights again, and put the kids in.
No, yeah. It's Steve Wilkes, by the way, the Cardinals head coach, the former DC at Carolina Panthers.
Robbie Williams' mate?
Like it. I once had a beer with him in a bar in Portugal, and Deck. So yeah, that's a weird night.
Not as weird as it was for them.
No, well, there's a story. Where two of my mates just stood next to Deck for about a good 15 minutes, just sipping their drink, waiting to talk to him. It was bizarre to watch. I think Josh Rosen is going to start. I hope he doesn't. I would quite like to see the Seahawks play against Sam Bradford. That would be fun. Lamar Jackson, yeah, they're not going to rush him. That's a Harbaugh, Smith, Kaepernick situation, I think, there with that guy. I think he's played in the NFL offense at Louisville, so he's definitely going to be ready. He's definitely the talent, but I think the Baltimore one is they're in it for the long haul. I think with Lamar, I think Josh Rosen will be the guy as soon as they put the numbers on the back of the jerseys, I think. My get in the bin. I can't really think of one. Can I just put Colin Cowherd in, like you just want to put Hugh Jackson every week?
Go on.
I want to put Colin Cowherd in for that Baker Mayfield hatchet job that he tried, but Baker Mayfield dealt with fantastically a few weeks ago. If you haven't heard, he pointed out that Baker Mayfield ran the opposite way to all his teammates after a touchdown against Ohio State, which Mayfield rightly pointed out that he was running to where all the Oklahoma fans and band, and then ran to the sideline with all his 100-odd teammates. A coward. For all your takes, terrible takes on wrestling, if you get anywhere near WWE on Fox TV, I think I may cry. You just stop it, get in the bin. College football, Pac-12, the AP poll came out a few hours ago, Adam, and for the first time, I think Softy said ever, I think you've probably seen this more often than I did tonight, the Washington Huskies are picked to win the Pac-12, not just the north half of the Pac-12, but they're picked to win the Pac-12, and with Jake Brown in entering his final year, the left tackle, who I can't remember his name,
Trey Adams,
and obviously Myles Gaskin, and all the talent in that defensive secondary, this Huskies team are probably going to be there again. I know we have other allegiances listening to the podcast, but me and you are Huskies, so we're going to talk Huskies for a bit. They're primed for another run, aren't they?
It's going to come down to the strength of Jake Browning's arm, I would imagine. He's going to have to start winning games for the team as opposed to being a role player. Nothing wrong with being a role player, but you have to be ridiculously good all over the field like Alabama were if you're going to, you know, have a role-playing quarterback. And I think Jake Browning needs to take a step up if the Dogs are going to really make a run at being the championship.
Yeah. I agree.
Like the national championship, obviously.
And also, they have a pretty heavy... Well, it's going to lay heavy on the season as well. In week one, when they go to Atlanta in that ridiculous stadium to face the Auburn Tigers as well. That's one way to start. And also, it's a sign of how the reputation and how the team has grown under Chris Peterson as well, that they're getting these games. We've talked about going to Michigan in a few years when they play there in the big house there. I mean, it's just a massive testament to what Chris Peterson's doing. And also, the people should start paying attention to Chris Peterson when it comes to NFL jobs soon, shouldn't they?
Yeah, but it's also really stupid to play hard games out of schedule.
Yeah, but it's what they've been poo-pooed with the last couple of years. It's the reason they probably won the championship game a couple of years ago when they got sideswiped by Bo Scarborough.
Just win. If you win every game, you cannot be left out of the top four. You can't. Doesn't matter who you've played against. Don't play against good teams.
No, yeah, it has its, well, obviously the money that schools making and not paying the players is a whole different conversation. Yeah, but we're probably going to try and do, I think that's everything, we covered everything, didn't we?
Yeah, I can't believe we managed to get an hour out of that.
Oh, yeah, there's only like seven things on really, so we've done quite well. yeah, so we're going to try and, I don't know when the first preseason game is, I think it's a couple of weeks, I think it's a couple of weeks tonight or tomorrow, I think, against the Chiefs. I'm pulling that out of the dark sky. Probably going to maybe do one before then with more stuff and more intel on what the players of the 2018 Seahawks look like and are going to, what the battles are fermenting into as well. Obviously, the positions we talked about earlier. If you want to get involved with the podcast, you can ask away any questions on Twitter and Facebook. We've got a Facebook page, The Pedestrian Podcast. Obviously, the Facebook also for the Seahawkers is UK Seattle Seahawks fans. On Twitter, it's Seahawkers UK. I think it's the same. UK Seahawkers on Instagram now as well. The Pedestrian Podcast, .podbean.com. Myself is at Stuart Court on Twitter, at Stuart _ Court. Keep doing that. Not that I get any followers anyway. At Adam Dean Nathan as well. There's still tickets available. It's going up on general sale in the first couple of days of August, I think, for the massive, huge, bigly meet-up before the London game against the Raiders. It's at Leadenhall Revolution, which is near London Bridge, I believe, Adam, I think.
I haven't even got a ticket yet, mate, to be honest. I probably should get around to sorting that.
Graceful behaviour. Yeah, £25. Just keep a look on the Twitter and Facebook for that, the first couple of days of August. They're still available to chapter members of UK, Germany and Ireland, and all America chapters now have the link to buy tickets. I think there's about 100 left, so you need to act quick. We're starting to get some info of what the team are going to be doing as well, so it's lined up to be a pretty cool, a pretty jam-packed few days. And obviously the game is on the 14th October at the new Tottenham Hotspurs Stadium, New Hot White Hart Lane, or whatever sponsorship Daniel Levy sells for a pretty dollar in the next few weeks. Tickets are available for Wembley season holders on the 3rd of September and some point before the game, probably, maybe on the 12th they'll go on sale to everyone else on general sale. So obviously quite a few people did pick up, including myself, hospitality tickets, and Adam as well. Picked up, so that should be pretty cool. I think that's everything. Obviously, yeah, also, we've got a new logo, so massive thanks to Gordon Curry for sorting all that out off his own back, because he saw that we were tweeting about changes, obviously, Ross's departure being that. But Gordon took it on himself to do a new logo, and it's pretty cool. When we do bonus shows during the season, if we do bonus shows, there is also one for that, which is pretty cool of Gordon to do. Yeah, that's all for now on this week's Pedestrian Podcast. As we sign off, though, this is what Brian Schottenheimer said about his relationship and building a relationship with the quarterback of the Seahawks, Russell Wilson. Until next time, this has been a Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks!
I love coaching the quarterback position. I've always done it that way. It's just something that's my passion. I wasn't a very good quarterback, so I've learned that I'm better coaching them and showing them the way to do things rather than doing it. Just I've admired Russell, the way his playmaking ability, but yet the ability to throw the football and create plays when things break down. That's hard to teach. It's hard to teach a guy to run around and make people miss and find an open guy in the end zone when they're open. That's hard to teach. So that was something really exciting for me, is to get here and work with a guy like that has done so well thus far, and just try to coach him up on some new fundamentals and techniques and see what he likes.
That is going to do it. 12s, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks, Super Bowl 48 champions.